Beta Talk is the voice of the most important frontline health workers around the globe, plumbers. They, along with installers and engineers, are also at the forefront of global warming issues. Beta Talk aims to give them a voice, assisting the industry and enabling them to discuss energy, plumbing and heating topics. Beta Talk with your host Nathan Gambling is sponsored by IMI Hydronic Engineering, giving you a voice in a global industry.
On the valley.
Right, welcome to Beta Talk. We are in the heart of Wales. Are we in the heart of Wales? Where are we in Wales?
We're in the centre of the universe. We're in
the bosom.
The bosom of Wales.
The warm breast of the country.
I must admit, it's very, very beautiful. It's an evening. What is the time?
Oh, it's dark.
It's dark.
It's dark. Dark o'clock. 25
well
to 11.
And 12. I'm joined by Brandon.
Hello.
Steve and Dove. Fantastic engineers that are all based up here in Wales. So we're going to chat to them today about some of the stuff they do. I know Brandon and Steve are very good with solar thermal, which is something I always try and push. And they're all you all do oil, I suppose, don't you? Because we're in oil country.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're plenty of oil.
So, Brandon, how did you get into this industry?
Completely by accident. I bought a plumbing company about 13 years ago. I'm a shipwright by trade. And I started rebuilding oak barns and building oak frames. And then started building eco houses. And the plumbers kept letting us down, so we bought them. And then it kind of fire and water made sense. And I love it.
And how long you been doing it now?
So since I bought that company, really. So I've probably been at it as my primary thing for, it must be about 11 years, I guess. I went back on my own. I was in partnership, went back on my own about 9 years ago. And so that's pretty well all I do. I do a little bit of building still, just to keep my hand in, but that's it.
And you do all sorts. So you do heat pumps, like say you do solar thermal,
yep.
You do oil. Do you do gas?
No, I don't do gas.
Steve, you're pretty much the same. Do you do heat pumps?
Yeah, heat pumps, solar thermal, oil, gas, commercial gas now, LPG, pretty much the entire scope.
And you come into the industry, like so many I'm sort of finding, from the army, didn't you?
Yeah, so left the army 21-ish, 21, 22, give or take, and then picking something that, you know, would challenge you a little bit more or push things that you could do, and then, straight into that, and then that was about 11, 12 years ago then.
And you still enjoying it?
Yeah. As soon as I changed and started learning new things and trying to push my sort of how much I could learn, how much I wanted to learn, the enjoyment came back then. So I got a bit complacent with not wanting to learn or thinking I knew more or knew everything. And as soon as I changed that, came back in.
And Dave, I know your father's, he's a lead, a specialist lead sheet roofer, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's a lead specialist. I couldn't really follow in his footsteps and...
Is that because you want to go mad on the lead fumes?
Well, no. Trying to listen to your dad, everything he told me to do was like tidy your room, do this, you know. So we couldn't get on. I do like the lead work, but I had to.
You still do it?
No, don't do it. My father still does. He's pretty.
So you like it that much, you jacked it in?
Well, I never started.
Oh, fair enough.
Carpenters are pretty much taking it from where we are now.
Yeah, it's
flat
not,
roofing generally.
Yeah, right? Everything flat roofing.
But then again, you rarely see lead roofing, do you, these days? I guess your dad does, but it is more of a specialist trade,
yeah,
whereas it used
really
to be something
specialist.
That plumbers did, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I was 15, he was re-roofing like Chester Cathedral, and I didn't really have an interest in it, but now... Looking at the work, I'm thinking that is beautiful.
Yeah, for sure.
It's amazing, and he's got a grade E in excellence in lead work, but unfortunately, I've got no interest. And it's like with any generation, you've got to be passionate about what you do, and I'm not. So I fell into plumbing by basically as. Trying to wag out of school, basically. I was on a work experience, and we had a task set in school. We had to go out, find an employer, and they would take us on, being a whatever you do. And so I went and wagged, basically, when I was 15, trying to be a smart ass. I said to my dad, I've got the local garage. They're going to take me on. Told the school, I'm going to do that with them. And then I got caught out. My dad phoned the garage and said, so my lad's David, he's starting on Monday, isn't he? Doing work experience. No, he's not. He phoned the school. The school have none of the wiser. And then he was like, right, you're going with a plumber I know. He's pretty good. I think you might enjoy it. And I did. I did a week with him. And then he said, right, well, if you enjoyed it, we'll put you into college and
off to go
from there. Like and I did and enjoyed it. And then. Sadly, I'm still passionate about the industries.
You love it, isn't
it? I love it. It's weird.
And you've got a couple of blokes that work for you, haven't you?
I've got a couple of guys that work for me. I've got two vans and an office and a girl that works in the office for me. And plodding on really well. Thought about growth, but you know, everyone wants to make a million and there's shiny pennies. But in reality, the bigger you get doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make more money. But
nope.
I just stayed small and passionate about it, and I'm constantly learning. And that's.
Well, I think that you've hit a key word there, learning. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of people. I don't know if that's the right thing to say. A lot of people in our industry, but there's people in our industry that have learned the sort of the bog standard things they need to do. I'm probably speaking specifically about the heating industry. So they're going in and boshing boilers on the wall. Now, all three of you, I really regard as the knowledge you know, and that's down to the fact you've been out learning and learning and learning, haven't you? And what do? You put yourself through training courses? How have you learned the knowledge you've got?
I read.
You read about it?
I read, yeah. I never used to read, but I've become a voracious reader when it comes to the heating industry. It just fascinates me. I don't know why. There's something about fire and water and pipes. I think for me, there's enough. I guess if I could go back and start again, I would have tried to channel myself into engineering, maybe gone and done a MECHENG degree, something like that. But the reality is, we're talking about it earlier, is that I can't possibly afford to do that now. There's no way that I can drop out. I mean, I've got a lot of respect for Rob, Dr. Boilers. You know, he's putting himself through his degree at the moment, and he's doing that, and that's, you know, for the win, but he ain't got four kids, and I do.
and
life's busy. I've got a wife, four kids, a mortgage, a business to run. So I read, and I learn, and I do what I can do, and sometimes I feel a little bit inferior because I never went to college. I'm a shipwright by trade. You know, this is completely by happenstance that I'm here. But it fascinates me. There's enough engineering in it to keep me interested. That's what I love about it. And there's no 2 days the same. And because I work for myself, if I don't fancy something, I just say no. And I quite like that.
Going to solar thermal, because I think it's something that our industry doesn't talk enough about, especially sort of when you go into the higher echelons of our industry. They don't seem to be talking about solar thermal.
How much of that was just completely killed by the PV thing, though? Because, I mean, there used to be quite a bit of solar thermal going on, with or without grant. I mean, I think I could probably say I've only ever done two grant installations. I don't think I've done more than that.
With thermal,
dozens. With thermal, solar thermal. Because an awful lot of solar thermal we put in is it contributes to heating, and therefore it automatically doesn't qualify for any grants, which is an utter nonsense.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So we put in quite a lot of buffer tanks. Yeah. I put solar thermal onto the buffer tank, boilers connect to the buffer tank. We have guys with PV who then dump that into buffer tank. I've got a client who's just put a 36 kilowatt hydro turbine in, and that heats his buffer tank, the XS. So it's just so simple. If you can put all your energy sources into one thing and draw off that, your heat sources, then it's
everybody wins. You lose the RHI then, that's the only problem.
You lose the RHI, but you actually win. But I can do a cheaper installation without the RHI than you can with.
Dump off the RHI without any of that.
It's a shame because the payments are huge. For solar thermal and the RHI, the payments are huge, but they're very, very conscriptive and very restrictive. Mm. So you can't, I can't justify carrying an MCS ticket for solar thermal. I just don't think it's worth it.
Solar thermal is one of those things that will always benefit the customer, though. It'll always pay for itself eventually, whether you're getting the RHI or not, because it's so versatile in what you can do for it. So it'll always benefit whether they're getting paid to have it or not.
Well, I mean, for example, this week, so I've had a real heavy week. We've done a big underfloor job. It's a cafe and five offices, and we've just done that now. And it's been a heavy-hour week, and I don't often take a bath because it just takes too much time. You get too wet, don't you, frankly? I prefer a shower. I can get in, shave my head, get washed, get clean, get out, and get dry. But I've had three baths this week, and it's all been solar thermal. My cylinder's hot. I get home, and the cylinder's hot. We get it this time of year when it's like it has been today. I get home, I say to the kids, you're filling the paddling pool, and you're filling it with hot water because there's all that water. might as well use it because it's coming back tomorrow.
Yeah, enjoy.
It's there for the win.
Yeah, Brandon, can I just stop you there? Because people that will be listening to this, they're not rural, like us. They don't understand the they don't understand it. That they're not in the same situation that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
That there is no gas in some situation.
Gonna need them gas.
So, I mean, how the industry is going to go rurally for us is a concern. And to the dog, it's a concern.
Shut up, Elmer.
But there has to be an alternative that is efficient and effective to move forward, because it has to be, for example, we need biofuel or electric, and it needs to be harnessed from the sun.
And one of the things we hear quite often, though, isn't it, especially coming out of Westminster, is, okay, so we're going to scrap gas. And the answer is heat pumps.
You can't.
Well, I mean, you can't. They say that, but I can take you to jobs. So we're in my backyard here, literally.
Stone houses.
And yeah, well, stone houses for one thing. But we've got a job that, you know, when I was building, it was just as I bought the plumbing company, and we did two jobs on the same road, literally dead end road. We did the ultimate house at the very top of the road and two houses down from it. And we put the two houses down in first, and the heat pump ran fine. By the time we got to the top, the juice wasn't high enough. We couldn't start an inverter. So we built that place using nail guns, run on compressors. I burnt out two compressors on the job because the voltage was so low that they wouldn't run properly.
Yeah, the grid isn't ready for it.
The grid's not ready for it. And it's all well and good. You know, it's a bit like they bang on about 5G. Well, you know, around here, wouldn't mind broadband. Like a decent broadband.
Well, yeah, straight up, you know. I can look at my phone now. I've got 3G. And people who are listening in London, 5G... Come back to 3G.
But bully for you. bully for you with your 5G.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There are issues that need to be sorted. And the grid infrastructure, especially as we've all got to go to electric vehicles and this, that and the other.
You can't.
Where's it all coming from? Where's it all coming from?
Hang on, Brent. So where do you think oil, the fuel itself, is going to go? Is it going to go biofuel, or is it going to be banked in electric and harnessed PV, solar, and then into
I think
banks?
It has to be a blend. I think it has to be a sensible blend. I think they'll do everything that we can. I mean, we're seeing now, aren't we, 10% blend on biofuels coming, and that's where it is. So I was chatting with some guys a few weeks ago at a meeting we were at, and they were saying they are looking forward now, and they're preparing to be able to run their boilers on 50% bio, really? On oil boilers.
Most of them coming out now are ready for bio.
Yeah, well, most of them. I mean, you look in your Riello burners, and if you've got green seals, yeah. You know, the old black seals are dying to death now, aren't they?
Okay, and I know Nathan's the host, but I'm going to ask him a question. what about the education on the, for example, the technology moving forward? For example, blending the fuel and biofuel on oil. So where's it going to go? And the training. Who decides what?
Well, at the moment, I mean, I'm sort of. In communication with Ofgem quite a lot, and obviously the biofuel is very exciting to them for obvious reasons. I'm not totally sure they're there yet. Apparently some research is coming out very soon around biofuel. I mean, there's different ways they're going to get this biofuel. I mean, I think the latest one was from algae.
Yeah, they've been talking about algae for 25 years.
Yeah.
The problem with algae is the fact that you can grow it in pits in nice, sunny, hot climates, but the trouble is as soon as you get a foreign bacteria in there, it tends to overtake, because you have to have very, very selective bacteria in order to be able to maintain your high oil content.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'd love to see it, because you know, I grew up in the oil industry, I think, and for love rural areas, we kind of...
Can we all say that?
Love a bit of kerosene.
I love a bit of kerosene.
Especially with your wee spray you were showing us about earlier. Get some of that down me.
Yeah, it's carcinogenic. You know, you're gonna get cancer off it.
Yeah.
No.
It's not. You sent me to town for 20 smokes.
It's generally not good.
No, it's not.
It's not good for people, and it's not good for the environment.
I think. I mean, the way it's going though, isn't it? Is that we're seeing blue flame burners come in, and you were saying as well that actually they are incredibly clean when you open them up. They are far less dirty than the old. Yellow flames. Now, it's odd because we saw the blue flame come to the rise, 3 years ago?
I installed my first
blue flame. And then now it's all low NOx, and that's the regulation that's coming. And blue flame's still ticking along, and it's, about 800 quid dearer than the normal one, I think.
It is,
flame.
Yeah.
But they are definitely cleaner. And so there's a point there where we can clean up the industry. You know, it could be burning cleaner. It's only a stroke of a pen to make blue flame regulation. We're ready to go. The kit's there. The technology's there. And that's a step in the right direction, surely. At which point, if we're burning, if we can get something that will burn, even if we have to adjust our pumps and our nozzles, if we can get a fuel that will burn, that's bio-derived, it's a fairly easy change for the industry, for us. It just comes in a tanker, it goes down a line, and yeah, okay, the first time they get it, they're going to have an issue and the boiler's going to wipe out. So we go in, it's a nasty job, and we have to, yeah, money, exactly, we're going to go in, and that's money for us to go and change it. But if we have to go and change the seals in a pump, and we have to change a nozzle and change the settings, but that gets us to a point where we can reduce carbon, A, in the combustion, so actually the exhaust is better, so the byproducts of combustion being the correct term, and
you should have been an engineer.
Thank you. Well, I consider myself an engineer, but I don't have a degree. That's the issue. But also, actually, how we derive it is cleaner as well. So we can, you know, do that somehow. Then I think that's got to be a sensible way to go, because the grid just ain't going to support it
on just installing them right.
Yeah,
installing them exactly how they should be, letting them burn for the amount of time they need to burn for, letting that flue gas temperature come up.
Rather than getting them cycling, short cycling, killer boiler every time.
There's probably more to be gained on getting these boilers that are existing working exactly how they should be working, rather than...
I mean, if you're going to count it as carbon, then the CROI, as they call it, so rather than EROI, which would be energy invested over energy returned, energy returned over energy invested, we can get... They do the same calculation with the carbon invested over the carbon returned, or whichever way around it is. And it's far better to use something well than it is to replace it. You know, the amount of energy that goes into making a new boiler...
That's huge.
It's massive. I mean, you've got to look at all the raw materials for mining it, for, you know, for
shipping,
for preparing, shipping, everything. Then manufacturing,
the things
shipping
will change again through time, because, like, trucks will become electric.
Yeah, yeah.
Ships will eventually be...
But even though there's more to be saved and more to be saved on the environment, just improving what we've already got in place.
And it can be done almost instantly.
Yeah, exactly. And very
year by year
cost,
basis on service, you can go and you can make these changes.
Yeah, definitely. And it's very little cost to upgrade the system. It's always the system for me over the boiler.
I mean, it's interesting. I was at Viessmann a few weeks ago for a base, they call it, base department.
Yeah.
Excuse me. BEIS. And one of the questions they asked us as installers was, well, would there be enough installers if we were to change technology? So if we were to go to heat pumps, so would there be enough installers? And I just said, yeah, you'll always get the installers, because there's money in it, there'll be people to install it. But will you get enough engineers? Now, okay, we had a discussion earlier about whether you have to have a degree to be an engineer. My argument would be, if you're designing a system, if you're doing a correct calculation, if you're specifying it right and you're commissioning it correctly, that's what I would consider an engineer.
There will always be the manpower, and everyone would be re-educated or retrained to do that job.
But the difference is between re-educating, in inverted commas, we all know you can go and do a course. 2 years ago, I had a chap contact me, just done my off-tech, bloke in his mid-50s, done his off-tech, wanted to set up as a service engineer. He was coming out of adult social care, is where he'd worked, and he'd gone, he'd done his 5 days. He'd managed to get in, because, of course, the condition is that you have a level two, because back when he was a teenager, he'd done City and Guilds level two in auto mechanics. He'd never worked in the industry, but that's what he'd done. He got in, he didn't have a Scooby-Doo. The point is that the training as it exists doesn't necessarily guarantee competence,
yeah,
does it?
It needs experience. Well,
say that again, at level two, to get into, to do what?
Well, because, so if you want to go and sit your off tech,
you don't need anything.
But on paper, what it says is that you should ideally be level two or be able to prove some competence, right, or some experience. Now, he didn't have that, but he had this level two in automobile mechanics from 30 years ago. And they said, yeah, okay, fair enough. But of course they did, because they were going to relieve him of £1,000, weren't they? With all due respect.
Yeah.
That's why they said yes, because he was going to sit there for 5 days. And he rode with me for winter, not last winter, the winter before. He rode with me whenever I was doing oil.
Well, hang on, so you took him under his wing?
Yeah, so he said he just wanted to ride shotgun for experience.
Wing,
and so a lot of people he contacted said, no, why would I help you train up and give you experience when you're going to be competition? To my mind, you know, the field's huge. There's plenty of work out there. If you're struggling to find work, I know some guys maybe do struggle, but out here where we are, if you've got some competency, your name gets about. And
you sell yourself around, yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's more within a rural situation. I don't know. I hear all these guys who are running checker trade and something. Do you do checker trade?
I do.
So
I do.
So Brendan's pointing at me, and I'm like, no.
No, no, you don't. Okay, I thought it was on your van. Trustpilot.
I don't want to get into in-depth conversation.
But my point is that I hear some lads who are saying, you know, this, that, and the other, they're not getting any work through it, and the other, but they have
but
to do it.
But it's very easy, and I want to. I'm looking at Nathan here saying it's very easy to
lambast.
No, get onto a platform. For example, I'm going to mention more than one, to not just to tar one. So I'm going to say Checkatrade, Witch, and it's Rated Agile. People, yeah. And My Builder, My Builder, and it's very easy to log on. And if you're a bit savvy with computers, you can manipulate the way your business looks, and it makes you qualified in any aspect that you wish to be.
Fake it till
you
make it.
Yeah, fake it till you make it.
Or just fake it anyway, whether you make it or not.
So, for example, I'm not experienced in biomass, but I could.
That's my bag, baby.
I could do. Yeah. You're very experienced in it. Very experienced in it, and I reckon. I could give me half a day.
Yeah.
Online, I could be better than you. And that needs to be addressed.
Well, it's one of my issues with the MCS is the fact that there are loads of people that came into the RHI, and because they saw the dollars that were to be made. And you had people who were savvy at business, and they were setting up companies, and off they went, and they got one engineer with a ticket somewhere. So I have an example. I have a job that we took on. I think I went to see you 2nd of January. Was the first time I saw it this last year, maybe now. Heavens, it's been that long. £96,500 installation in a proper manor house. So they redid one wing, £2.2 million job, and the heating was £96,000. And it just didn't work. It just wasn't right. But the paperwork was beautiful. I mean, I couldn't dream of making such paperwork. Beautiful folder, lovely drawings. I've even seen the commissioning certificate, which is signed off by the guy's name, and then it says position in the company, chief commissioning engineer. Well, if you've got a title called chief commissioning engineer, you know there's something going wrong there.
Well, it says that on banknotes, so
yeah, for sure. But the point being that we have slowly but surely turned the system around and got it to work. But they had all the paperwork in place, and according to the government systems, the MCS and this, that, and the other, they were absolutely top notch company, but they were wholly incompetent. And, you know, that's what we're up against, is the fact that competency is very hard to prove, whereas compliance, in inverted commas, so 2 weeks ago I had my MCS inspection, and I had my office inspection, the desktop inspection they call it, and they went through my paperwork, the fine tooth came. Yeah, and I had a couple of bits lacking, and, you know, minor bits, I had the risk assessment wasn't worded correctly. You know, great, okay, fine. But some people can do that, and yet the engineering side, when they're in a plant room, they can't get it right. To my mind, that's base over apex. There's some serious issues there.
Yeah, but so how can you get someone that is good at both? How can you get someone who's really good at paperwork and really good at?
But do we need that paperwork side of it? Is that an integral part of it?
Well, I mean, the idea is the way the government would spin it, and the way other people would spin it, is the fact that actually that is what proves competence, and the fact that they have this ticket, the fact that I have that little heart shaped two different blues that says MCS, means that I am therefore competent. I find that utterly terrifying.
You'd think that to prove competence, to prove true competence, has to be sort of inspected by someone who is competent, truly incompetent, not just incompetent at sort of inspecting paperwork. So you need someone who is from the industry, inspecting other people from the industry, but a top-end industry sort of installer, you know, not just average Joe.
I mean, so I've had two different inspectors. I had one guy, am I allowed to name names?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a guy called John Jones. He has a company called Clwyd Heating up north. Up Conway Way, and he came down and he runs an outfit, and he was tight. I mean, he knew his stuff. Anal, phenomenally anal, and he runs a very tight company. I suspect that's what enables him to do it, but he understood. I've now had a new guy come down who, fortunately, I can't name, so I've forgotten his name, and he's a lecturer at a college up in Bolton, and they sent him down to assess me because he needed to have the assessment in different competencies, and so he was the closest guy they had, and he was alright, but he was far more concerned about petty paperwork than the install.
Okay. So, Nathan, talking about petty paperwork, being a college lecturer, someone who's... You've been in the... I'm not picking on you. Well, I am picking on you because you're a petty paperworker. That's the way we see people like yourselves. I'm looking at you. You're giving me daggers.
It's not a personal petty paperwork purveyor.
Every time an assessor of your nature come to assess our work, it's all about paperwork. Do you think that can change at all, and it needs to be more? I don't know. But
I think the thing for me, David, is that it biases it to the fact that British Gas have the same onus upon them to be MCS registered as I do. They pay more in a fee because they've got it relative to how many employees you get. So 1 to 5 is one fee, 5 to 50 is another, and you know there are scales of fee. But the paperwork onus, the inspection onus, is the same on them as it is on me.
So, right? So for example, that MCS. Now, I'm not MCS, so I'm being ignorant now.
Yeah.
I don't know about this.
It's the first time.
So, you. I can't reach him. I
Safely the other side of the table.
So
it's a beautiful table as well. It's a slate table, isn't it?
It's a bit snooker table.
Snooker, eh?
So, for example, we've got likes of yourself, who's one man band, and then we've got next company up who has 6 or 7, and then it goes bigger again. And I'm just going to jump and say British Gas got their MCS.
Are they all
assessed the same? Because is
the criteria upon which they assess the same?
Is it a one day thing for British Gas, like it's a one day thing for you?
Now the way they do it is they have to assess each person who is signing off the work. So that's of course how you get around it, isn't it? I mean,
a big company like British Gas have, for example, I don't know how many employees they have. So they've got maybe 20,000. I know they've got thousands, but MCS.
The one of the criteria for the MCS is that everything has to be specified, invoiced, and signed off by the same office. That's the way they do it. So what we're seeing more and more
of...
An umbrella is exactly the word I was about to use. So what we have currently is some manufacturers who are offering to sign off your MCS, rightly or wrongly, I'm not passing judgment on that, so that in order to take the load off engineers, they are offering a system whereby you can become one of their guys... And you can be trained by them, and they have your competencies on record, and they have all the other things, your insurances, you have a subcontract agreement with them. And you go to a client, I go to Mrs. Jones, or Mrs. Evans, or Mrs. Williams, you know, there's plenty of them around here.
Stop using Welsh surnames.
Well, we're in Wales.
Okay.
Like, that's my reality. Like, when someone phones me up and say, hello, my name's Dave Jones, that's not particularly, you know, distinctive within my contact book, I'll be honest with you. But... I go to them, they ask me, they want a heat pump. I don't currently hold my MCS for a heat pump. So I have to go to one of the manufacturers, be it NEBE or be it Grant, and I either sign off through NEBE, which I use New Heat for, and I sign off through them. They charge me a fee, which I might not disclose publicly, for signing off.
I think was it a penny or a pound?
It's several pounds, let me assure you. You're off to bed, Michael. Michael's our host for the night,
and
he's been absolutely superb, and he's just off to bed, so... but I go to them, they charge me a fee for the MCS sign-off, they provide me with drawings, they do the calculations, it gets to the point whereby they quote me, I then quote my client, obviously with a markup, I tell the manufacturer what I'm charging, they then invoice the client directly and pay me as a subcontractor. I get to fix my price, because if I've won the contract, that's my bag, and they sign it off. Now, some are better than others, some are more thorough than others, some give you better guidance and drawings and directions than others. But the point being that what they're trying to do is make it easier for us on the ground, which arguably is great. The point being that is there enough accountability? Whereas there's a one-man band on my MCS, I get inspected annually. You know, and they come and they see me, and they have to see an MCS job for each of the technologies that I sign off every year.
Yeah, who's inspecting the actual boys that have fallen under the umbrella?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we've been to jobs that are under an umbrella scheme, and it's it's miles off, absolutely miles off.
Elmer,
and then I fall under an umbrella scheme with Grant. Anything that I do that needs MCS or RHI, I jump into bed with Grant then. So it's
yeah, through the G-set.
It's worth, that's it. it's worth mentioning that these things, we talk about the RHR, MCS, but this paperwork only exists so the client, the customer, can get some money back.
Yeah.
And I think that's in itself has created a problem because you two can put in systems. Mm-hmm. I mean, the customer might not need the money back. And you can just go around there, put in a nice system.
I can do it cheaper if you don't need the paperwork.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I'd be quite openly, I charge £650 for an MCS sign-off. So if I'm doing it, that's what I charge, because that's what I reckon it costs me. I've now discovered that actually most of the umbrellas, it's about that amount of money that they charge.
Eight
you pay for Grant, is it? So, I've just paid less than that with New Heat for one of theirs. But the point being that they take on the responsibility for the job, which is fine. My concern comes with, I've got a client who's came on my books last year, and she had a pellet boiler installed by somebody, and it was signed off on under an umbrella, and there were issues with it. So I raised them, and I said, look, you have either an RECC certificate, or you have a HICE certificate, which is a warranty and workmanship guarantee. What do they call them? WAG. There's a little synonym, isn't there? But anyway, it's a warranty that you have to take out on every job. Have to do it, and they're up to £300 per job. And that's just a cost I pass on to the client. That's money that needn't be paid. The point being that if I go bust, my client can get it fixed under warranty. However, what I found with this lady is the flue isn't to building regulations, it isn't to manufacturer's instructions, and therefore we haven't got adequate draw on the back end of it, and so the thing's sitting up and not burning efficiently. Now, I said to her, and she pulled out her paperwork, and there it was, I said, phone them. Phone the guys that installed it, guys who signed it off first. And they're like, no, it's all right because it's got a fan on it. Well, I'm terribly sorry, but this thing is a negative pressure boiler, negative pressure pellet boiler, negative pressure pellet combi boiler, as it happens. And they're like, no, it's got a fan, so you won't have to worry about the flue regulations.
Huh?
And I was what? How
get out of it. Go on.
Well, were you discussing pellet boilers then? I'm now having.
David's just joined us. He's just been off to the hedge to himself.
I've been looking after dogs. Which I'm scared of. And
which is mildly entertaining.
No, I've been actually taking out pellet boilers.
Yeah, I can well believe that. Yeah.
And
some of them are terrible.
Because
the amount of heat pumps we take out.
Well,
they're not even close.
They're not signed up to the RHI,
mm-hmm.
and it's cost them an absolute fortune. And then
in pellets.
So they are switching back
to oil.
To oil.
Yeah.
So
there is an awful lot to be said for the simplicity and the reliability of an oil boiler. A lot of people, there used to be a chap on the forums called Mike from the North, or Northern Mike, and Mike from the North, he called himself, and he made a point many years ago. It was when batch boilers were big business and log boilers. We put a lot of them in. So the idea being you burn enough wood in a short space of time to provide all your heat for 24 hours. And a lot of people don't understand how you do it. You take the heat load of the house, you make sure that you can provide the heating for 24 hours, you size a buffer tank to
storage,
do that.
Yeah.
You then size a boiler to heat that buffer tank in one burn cycle. Right, and a lot of people are saying I'm burning far too much wood, yada yada yada, and he made exactly the same point every time that I do is I want you to test, you know, say 20% of the logs you're putting in for moisture every time you put them in. I want you to weigh the whole fuel load every time you burn it, and a lot of these things have got a heat meter on the back, so we can see how much heat's coming out of them, and that way we can assess whether the boiler's working correctly initially. And his point is that actually when you got oil, you have this little titty 10mm pipeline comes in, down which we can deliver a phenomenal amount of energy. I mean, a standard Riello pump will pump 20 gallons an hour, right, and we throttle them back.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bypass runs, and it shoots back. So they're pumping far more than they need. The amount of fuel you can deliver down a 10mm oil line is phenomenal. Now, his argument is if you had to tip a litre of oil in every now and then, you'd soon get fed up of tipping a litre of, you know, tipping it in. Or, conversely, if you had to bring a balloon of gas and put a Jubilee clip on the end of the gas line... you'd soon realise how much gas you're burning. But because it's delivered easily and effortlessly, you don't. And so a lot of people don't understand how much energy they're using. And often, actually, 95% of all the problems I see with wood burning, so on batch boilers, because we do a lot of batch boilers, and also we do stove systems onto, you know, wetbacks. So we put them through thermal stores, or we put them, you know, whatever. There's a myriad of ways, and that's not what we're discussing tonight. 95% of the issues I see is wet wood, is poor fuel. You know, so once we ascertain that the fuel's okay, we can then sort out actually how much energy goes in. That's why we test the moisture content and we weigh it and therefore we can assess whether it should be heating a property or not. But pellets, an awful lot of people get fed up of pouring pellets in, because a lot of people are buying them in 10, 15 kilo bags, and they just say, oh, I'm pouring 6 bags a day in. And I'm like, well, but 6 bags a day is only, if they're 10 kilo bags, 60 kilos times 4, you know, 60 times 4 is 240 kilowatt hours.
Yeah, it's not much. Yeah. Still, is it?
It's not a lot of heat.
No.
But people don't see that. They don't understand it because, you know, 240 kilowatt hours, I can provide in, well, I've got 11 kilowatt hours per litre of oil, haven't I? So it's 11, 12 litres of oil.
Yeah, it's not much, is it? Yeah.
What do you say? I mean, there's a lot of people that are really against burning wood now, isn't there, because of the particulate matter. Well, I mean, what's your...
PM2.5.
What's your outlook on that?
Yeah.
That's it.
Do you know, an awful lot of it, I think it's an absolute nonsense that people have wood burners in town, frankly. I think if you're on natural gas, you have to do hellish well to compete with that. You know, it's funny.
You know that woman you gave me her number to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, she's connected to natural gas.
Is she?
Yeah.
I didn't know that, sorry.
Yeah, no, and I went there and she was carbon neutral. And I was thinking, well, you know, if your copper's in, it's not truly carbon neutral because... You're not giving it time. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, there's loads of things, carting, there's mountains and mountains of things. You know, your district lines and all that stuff. Yeah, they're already in. It's already in. Natural gas is there. Your meter's there. It's paid for within carbon. You know, if you're thinking about it, the carbon of that meter is already paid for. Use it. And you can burn gas, you know, really efficiently.
If it's on the back of a decent system.
That's
it.
And, you know, she's talking about 2,000 litre buffers, this and that. I said, look, you've got natural gas. It's there. It's paid for in carbon. Everything's good. We just need to put
it's existing. Carry on.
Something's efficient in there. And, you know, I walked away from the job because it was, no, I don't want to touch that gas. It's going to ruin the world with the gas. And I was like, well, you're going to
instead, you're going to ruin it with particulate matter.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. And so, we walked away from that job because of that. It was a sort of, you know, brainwashed culture. And so if I burn wood that I've grown over here, it's going to save the world over there. But, you know, the bigger picture is it's not.
Sorry about that, but she contacted me because one of her friends is a client of mine.
Yeah.
Who had they built their market gardeners, and they built a really lovely house, larch frame with SIPS panels on, and we put in a batch boiler and solar thermal into a tank.
It's that picture she showed me and said, I want that, and I was like, yeah, that's great, but you're connected to gas here, so you don't need that.
Go mad on the solar thermal and the insulation, and then let's go. I mean, sorry, this started with solar thermal. We've kind of drifted away from it. That would be, if somebody wants to do something sensible, I would say, let's put some tubes up. I'm not a fan of flat plates. They're damn heavy, for one thing, to get on the roof. You know, yeah, fine, in different climates maybe, but in our climate, I'm absolutely sold on evacuated tubes.
Yeah, one set of tubes will do the work of two flat.
Thank you for listening to an episode of Beta Talk. Season 1 has been sponsored by IMI Hydronic Engineering. I've been your host, Nathan Gambling. You can find me on Twitter under the name Beta Teach. You can also find Beta Talk on Twitter. And if you need to contact me, you can use my email, learn@betateach.co.uk. You can also look at the website, betateach.co.uk, to see what's going on over there. Thank you once again for listening, and I hope you enjoy future episodes.